Welcome to the latest edition of Inside the Rebels podcast. My name is Jonathan Von Tobel. With me, as always, my trusty sidekick. Not a sidekick. See, that makes you feel like you're the one that started this. So right. I feel like I always feel kind of awkward leading, but you know.
I got no problem. We can rotate it if you feel awkward with it.
That's Joe Arrigo from Scout.com, InsideTheRebels.com. We've got some big news going on.
Yeah, big news. Johnny Stanton, the starting quarterback for our UNLV Rebels, sprained the LCL and has a hamstring sprain. Hamstring strain as well, and is out 3 to 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like the ball goes to Dalton Sneed, and Kurt Palandek will get time, according to Coach Sanchez. But I got a question. Well, I'll get into my question later. What do you think about them starting Sneed over Palandek at this point?
Tony Sanchez made it seem like in the press conference that it was more of an injury deal than it was an on-the-field thing. He mentioned Palandek's running ability and the fact that he didn't seem comfortable when in practice, you know, kind of tucking and running like he's good at doing and using his athleticism. You kind of made a funny motion off mic, and I kind of agree with you actually a little bit. It's kind of just putting icing on or lipstick on a pig, essentially, is what it is. Is look, he maybe has regressed in the past couple of weeks. Who knows? Because the storyline for such a long time, and I talked about this with Taylor Byrne, who covers this covers the Rebels for the Sun, and he's even mentioned that, you know, for the longest time it was Johnny and it was Kurt, and then a couple rungs down, it was Dalton Sneed.
And then Armani Rogers.
Yeah, and Armani was just because of youth and inexperience, not because of play. And then now, all of a sudden, for some reason, you have this guy, Dalton Sneed, just jump ahead of Kurt. There's something there I feel like they're not telling us.
I've said from the beginning, and I think we've touched on it a little bit, especially last week, when we had Pritch on with us. My feeling, and I don't know this to be true as far as asking players or coaching staff members, but my feeling is I don't think the team believes in Palandek.
Mm.
I think they seen what they had last year in him. You know, the UCLA game is indicative. He completed one pass for 3 yards. You know, that was the furthest pass.
I mean, there's a pick six. It's a completed pass.
Well, completed pass from his own teammate for more than – he had no completed passes over 3 yards against UCLA. So – for me, I think, you know, I think that players feel when the rubber hits the road and it's crunch time, his butthole puckers a little bit. You know, and excuse the expression, but I think they don't have the confidence that he can lead them. Mm. And that's just, again, that's my opinion. Mm-hmm. That being said, I want to ask you a question. I'm going to name 3 teams, and I want you to tell me what they all have in common. Wisconsin, Texas, and Alabama, besides being 3-0.
They have freshman quarterbacks.
Exactly. I think it's time you take the chains off Armani Rogers and you give him the reins and let him go. And I'm going to tell you why. Tony alluded to it and will allude to it today where basically he said if Armani's going to play and the redshirt comes off, if the redshirt comes off, Armani's going to play. Period.
Yeah, because you're not going to burn that. He said, we're not going to burn that and have him sit. If we're going to burn the red shirt, he is going to start.
Exactly. Mm. So, well, not he didn't say start. He said get playing time.
Mm.
And they already took him off a scout team and had him start getting some time with the ones and the twos. Mm. You don't do that if you don't have in the back of your mind he's going to get some playing time. I thought initially that you don't play him until after the San Diego State game just because of San Diego State. I totally changed my thought process, thinking about everything, really like just sitting back at home and really trying to process it all, JVT.
Mm.
I think it's time you let the kid go out there and play. He's your highest recruited player in the history of your program. He's 6'5", he's 215, albeit he's wiry. Mm. He's 215, he's got a great arm, and he can do more with the ball with his arm as well as his legs than any quarterback on that roster right now.
Okay, so a couple things. One is I think – I heard him mention during the press conference, Tony Sanchez, that Armani was getting work with the ones. I figured that was just, hey, look, if Dalton Sneed goes down, if something happens, he needs to at least have reps with these guys. In case of an emergency, he's going to play. I don't disagree with playing him because, obviously he's the future. You want to get him out there. I said before that I'd rather have him wait till next year because I just think essentially we're seeing with his defense, this isn't going to be really a win-now team. And you mentioned playing him after San Diego State. I would argue if you're going to play him now, because why would you want to burn the red shirt off when you've already got six games in the books?
But that's why I changed my thought process. After I thought that early on yesterday.
Mm.
But then I changed it when I actually started really thinking about it, because why would you have this talent and just let him go to waste for a year? I understand getting him acclimated with the system and, you know, the speed of the game. But at this point in the game, you're 1-3. How much worse can you do?
Hmm.
So you win four games instead of five? Is that one win going to mean that much? Look at what Josh Rosen did as a true freshman last year.
No, I'm not arguing that he can be effective. My thing is, if you're going to play him, then let's go Fresno State. Let's go. I don't
exactly.
care.
Exactly. That's my point. I'm in the camp where I'm beating the table. Play the kid now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's let Armani get in there, do the work that he needs to do. Let's let him get in there and do it, and have Dalton back him up, because then you have a guy you know that could back him up. Because going forward, that's what Dalton's going to be.
Mm.
Like, let's be real. Dalton or Johnny's going to be, especially if Johnny comes, if Armani plays and Johnny comes back, Armani does well, it's Armani's team. They're going to be his backups regardless.
Mm.
And then you can see what the kid has, so you know whether or not now you need to go out there and try to look for a quarterback. This gives you an opportunity now to see what Armani's like when the bull is flying with this quarterback class of 2017 and 2018. You'll know whether or not you need to go get a guy, because you're banking on somebody to be your guy right now, but you don't know if he's a dude or not. Let's get in there and let him see what he could do.
I think what plays into it, though, is I think this coaching staff still believes in Johnny Stanton, and I think maybe what they're thinking is, let's let him heal for these 3 to 4 weeks, because it's almost like if you turn to Armani Rogers, I don't think there's any turning back to Johnny Stanton, because, like you mentioned, that's your future, that's your guy. If we're going to go to Armani, I mean, then why would I bench him again for, you know, player A, Johnny Stanton, who's been benched just because of injury, not because of play, but he hadn't even played that well to begin with. So I think part of what plays into it is the coaching staff still believes in Johnny Stanton, so they're going to go, okay, look, Kurt, not up to speed, something they're seeing there they don't like, let's roll with Dalton. We want this team to be Johnny's because he's only a junior and he can actually lead us to something this year, as opposed to throwing out Armani Rogers, who's a freshman. And as you mentioned, yes, that's fine. Like Alabama and all those teams, that's great. But Armani Rogers is also going to be throwing to three freshmen and a junior. He's got a sophomore as his lead tailback. His backup is a redshirt freshman as well. I mean, there's a lot of youth. This isn't a team like Alabama or Wisconsin whose defense is awesome that you can throw in a freshman and be like, okay, just don't crash the car.
I don't think Wisconsin's defense is a surprise. I'm going to be honest with you. That team, what they rely on is a strong running game, but their quarterback, the freshman, and I think his name's Hollenbrook or something like that.
Yeah, Hollenbrook or something.
Hollenbrook, yeah. Okay. He's the kid. He was... 6 months ago, just graduated high school.
Mm.
And then if you look at Texas...
I thought he was a redshirt freshman.
No, he's a true freshman. Okay. The redshirt freshman was Bart Houston, who lost the job to the kid due to being ineffective. And you look at what they're doing in Texas, that kid's a true freshman, and that team isn't a great team. That team's full of youth, a lot like UNLV.
But the talent level between the Texas and UNLV is astronomical.
Certain people in Texas would argue that it's not that far apart.
Yeah, but to certain people, Texas are also insane about their football.
Exactly,
they think that, you know, three stars are like, what is this garbage? And here in UNLV, we're like three stars. Okay, bring them on in.
But you're looking at Armani. Armani was a top 75 player. Armani, a quarterback. Hmm? Armani was the number, I think, six quarterback on scout.com last year as a senior. Cal, UCLA, Arizona State, Arizona. Those are big name schools that were after him, and he chose UNLV. So there's a reason why he believes in what Tony's selling. At this point, Alabama, albeit, yes, their offensive line is a bunch of seniors. Mm-hmm. That's where they're upperclassmen. But the young kid is throwing to freshmen and sophomore receivers. He's handing the ball off to a sophomore, a redshirt freshman running back as well. So there's a lot of youth there. I know the talent is way different.
And coaching is a lot different as well.
Yeah, you know, Nick Saban is Nick Saban. And
along with Lane Kiffin as your offensive coordinator,
okay,
things
look,
of that nature.
Lane's a friend of mine, so I'm going to let it be. But Lane is as good as his talent is, and that's really any coach, but Lane is the antithesis of he's as good as his talent is.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen Saban go off on him on the sideline because of the stuff Lane does.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, I think at this point, who's to say – going forward, Johnny Stanton doesn't move to the tight end position or the Mark Felipe fullback hybrid fullback tight end position because of his running style, or a short yardage back going forward, because you see what he can do throwing the ball. I'm a big Johnny supporter. I'll be the first to admit it. He's an erratic thrower with mechanical issues. Who's to say that going forward they don't change his position because Armani shows out that and shows that he's the guy that can win for UNLV going forward.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's obviously a possibility, but that's also if they decide to burn the redshirt. It's all dependent on if Armani plays, and I don't see this year Armani playing. I just don't think the coaching staff wants to pull it off of him. I think that if they wanted to, they would have done it right now. Like, this is the opportunity, right? Johnny Stanton's hurt. You have a limp Kurt Palandek, this third string kid who's only thrown one pass. It was a 6-yard completion against Jackson State in the season opener. You know, so I think all signs point to, if this coaching staff wanted to burn the red shirt, now is that moment, and they don't feel. It doesn't seem like they want to.
This is all predicated on the best case scenario, Johnny coming back in 3 to 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. That may not be the case.
But I think that's what they're banking on.
Yeah, that's what they're thinking, but that may not be the case. They'll get more information as the weeks lead up, the end of this week, going into next week, to see the progress. But, I mean, that's trying to let the LCL heal naturally through therapy and rehab and the hamstring as well. At the end of the day, it could not turn out well for Johnny as far as what potentially could happen. And then what do you do? You're going to stick with Dalton Snead and you win 3 games? No, I really firmly believe that Armani Rodgers can get you to 5 to maybe 6 wins. I think he'll steal some games because no one's seen him on tape other than what he's done in high school, where they have 3 years of tape on Johnny from his time at Nebraska as well as Saddleback. Armani brings a completely different skill set than Dalton or Palandek. Palandek is a runner.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he is. He's not a passer at all. He's a runner.
Mm-hmm.
With Snead, you kind of have a little bit of both, but he doesn't. Again, arm strength is a question. He doesn't have that cannon. Like Tony said, he is kind of quirky and goofy, which is a good thing. But at the end of the day, Armani has the arm strength to press the ball down the field, can throw the deep outs, can throw those deep ends, those comeback routes, can put balls in small windows. Armani can get out and run. But when he gets out and run, he does something a lot like Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees when they would get out and run. Their head is downfield, and they're looking to pass first, which, again, now the defense has to play pass first. By that time, he's already 3, 4, 5 yards down the field. And if he gets that far down the field, if he gets past the linebacker, he's got the ability to go all the way to the house. Armani brings a completely different skill set than anybody else on that team. This is the way Johnny does. Johnny's skill set is different than Armani's. So, you know, Johnny has that cannon for an arm, and he's a Tim Tebow type runner. He'll run over you. I don't know if Armani's going to run over you, at least not right now. But Armani's a guy that he'll put his shoulder down if he has to, but he can get out and run and do some things.
Yeah, definitely his skill set will add to the offense. So let's focus on the offense then right now. Right now, Dalton Snead is the guy.
Yeah.
He's playing on Saturday. We have him. He's a redshirt freshman. Have him down as 6 foot, 195 pounds. Obviously, quarterback, redshirt freshman out of Scottsdale, Arizona. I would think that we're going to see a lot more of the dual-headed monster, Lexington Thomas, Charles Williams.
Yep.
Maybe a little bit more of Xavier Campbell and Green.
Yeah.
So running is definitely going to be a big thing for UNLV going into Saturday. Passing game, though, I would think quick, easy throws. Don't have to do too much. A lot more read option, I would think.
Probably.
Especially with the success that Johnny had. Maybe Dalton can copy that and do something else. What do you think?
I would agree with that, and I think maybe a little play action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're gonna pound the rock, obviously. I think you're gonna see Lex, it wouldn't surprise if he runs for over 200. I mean, he's gonna probably get 20 to 30.
They're gonna have to have a similar game like they did against Idaho. Like, obviously 350 plus yards against Idaho on the ground.
Well, yeah, Lex had 168. I think Johnny had over
131.
And then you had, you know, Williams ran for a little bit, Campbell ran for a few yards, same thing with Green. So yeah, you're looking at 300 yards rushing, that probably about 150 to 160 passing, I would say, realistically. Anything more than that, I'll think that it's a great day and someone drank the Kool-Aid that they shouldn't have drank. But I think, yeah, maybe we'll start seeing some more screens, you know, to get it out to the back, balls out in the flat, hit them on a little flare, slants.
Just easy throws, you know.
Yeah, stuff maybe to get him in a rhythm early to build his
roll him to one side of the field so he just has to read one side. He doesn't have to go look left or right or things of that nature.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I could definitely see that. But, you know, again, I don't know. At this point in the game, I'm still beating that drum. But I'll say this. Dalton looked pretty doggone good in spring.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked pretty good in the practices I've seen early on prior to the week one game in against Jackson State. And he's a guy that actually some players have told me that they feel that he can get the job done, but I don't think getting the job done is enough. And Tony touched on it yesterday. People were pissed off that they lost to Idaho.
Yeah.
People were pissed off that they lost to Central Michigan, legitimately.
Mm-hmm.
The expectations have been raised here. I mean, even though I've only been here 9 months or so, you know, when I thought of UNLV football, I thought 3 to 5 wins, you know, that's a great year for them. I think most people in the Valley feel the same way. You know, oh, 3 wins? Oh, heck yeah, that's a pretty good year.
Yep.
Every other year we'll have that blip where we can maybe go to a bowl. He's raised the expectations, and I think even for the players themselves. So I think that's a good thing going forward. I mean, it sucks that they lost the Idaho game, mm-hmm. and it really sucks, you know, the Central Michigan game, the way they played. But at the end of the day, when you look at everything, the expectations have been raised, and that's why I think you have to play Armani Rodgers, because expectations have been raised. And this actually buys you a little more time.
In what sense?
In a sense where, okay, if let's say they win 4 games, yeah, but you know what? They only played a quarter of the season, the first 4 games with the starting quarterback. They put a freshman in the rest of the way, so he had to learn. It gives them a little more time, and it gives them a built-in, I don't want to say excuse, but it gives them a built-in reason to say, okay, you know, yeah, but we played the freshman quarterback, and it also tells the true freshmen that you're recruiting, you come here, you're going to get an opportunity to play right away.
Well, I would actually argue that they already have that time, considering that we mentioned this earlier, is you don't get Fertitta Football Complex. You don't get the support, the expectations because of what Tony Sanchez is doing. So I think that the time was already built in because this program isn't anywhere near where it's supposed to be. He already had, I believe Tony Sanchez had about 5, 6, 7 years already to just truck along, and he could have gone 5-3-5, you know, 5 wins, just alternating between 5 and 3 for about 5 years before someone was like, all right, you know, what's going on because of everything that's happening off campus.
But
what I'm saying is I don't think you need the excuse of, oh, we have a redshirt freshman. I think he's already got a built-in about 6 years worth of time because he is building a program from the ground up.
Well, yeah, but that's why. If you got – okay, I'll go back to I want to say 98 or 99 or maybe – yeah, 98 or 90, maybe 2000. USC had Paul Hackett as a head coach. His offensive coordinator was Hugh Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
They recruited a kid out of Orange County, California, I believe out of Rancho Santa Margarita, same school as Johnny Stanton, or was a modern day, regardless. It was Carson Palmer. And they knew early on Carson Palmer's skill set was the best fit for what they wanted to do going forward. And quite frankly, the quarterback position was trash.
Mm-hmm.
Armani has – is he Carson Palmer? No, but he's got a lot of the same skill set. Carson was pretty mobile early on at his time at USC. Armani has the same skill set. They gave him the keys, and albeit Hackett was gone 2 years later for USC fans, thankfully, and Pete Carroll came in.
Mm-hmm.
But it gave them reason for hope because they seen the flashes. They seen it, man, you see that throw. Imagine a year from now when he's a sophomore. Imagine 2 years from now when he's a junior and he's 225 pounds or 230 pounds and he's still running a 4-5 and he can still throw a ball 65 to 70 yards down the field and he can still hit receivers on a dime. And the offense is his offense. He knows every aspect of it. You seen it with Deshaun Watson and Clemson his freshman year. He came in, he didn't start the year as the starter. He came in as the year went on, and then he ended up playing the last part of it with a torn ACL.
Mm-hmm.
But you've seen the flashes, and look at what he did his sophomore year. Takes him to a national title game. You can have, and albeit I'm not saying Armani's going to take UNLV to a national title game next year, but you can still see those flashes with him versus having him wait 2 years, and then he comes in as a redshirt sophomore, and it's like, Where was this guy a year from now when we probably could have won six games? Mm-hmm. Where was this guy maybe where we could have won five games? Because you want to win more than three games regardless right now. Mm-hmm. You won three games last year with Palandek as your quarterback. Tony knows you can win more than three games. This team is more talented. It's more athletic. It's more tough. It has more heart. And is starting to look a lot like Tony in the way Tony wants to run things and that coaching staff. So why not put the guy in that you are going to hand the keys over in a year or two? Give it to him now. I have no problem with that. Mm. Dalton Snead, he could come out and beat Fresno State, but he's not going to beat San Diego State. Tony wants to give the guys the best chance to win going forward, the upperclassmen, especially the seniors. Armani Rodgers is the guy that can give you the best chance going forward to win. And this is not – I don't mean this as a slight to any other quarterback on the roster. I mean, if Johnny's healthy, I'm saying that about Johnny. But the reality is he's not, and it's time that you give it to your next best person in line, and that's Armani Rodgers, regardless of age.
Look, I agree with you. Again, I do. Everything you're saying is right. But again, I think Johnny Stanton is the key here as to why they won't move forward with Armani. If he's going to come back in 3 weeks – I think the coaching staff wants to roll with Johnny, and I think they think Johnny will give them the best chance to win the maximum amount of games this year. So I think that's what the issue is here. Because if you had a situation where it was just Dalton Snead and Kurt Palandek, then of course, I don't think there's any argument if Kurt is your starter, so to say, for these first four games, and then he gets hurt, then yes, of course, you're going to burn the red shirt, you're going to bring in Armani. But the guy who was hurt is a transfer who you brought in specifically to win now with, and you think that he's capable of winning now with. So I think that's what's holding this coaching staff back from saying, all right, look, let's roll with Armani. Because again, I'll repeat, this week is the week that you're going to burn the red shirt and bring him out, because you have three straight weeks of no Johnny Stanton. You know this. You're not going to roll with Dalton Snead for 2 weeks, burn the red shirt, bring him on for 1 week, have Johnny come back, and then bench Armani. Sanchez already said that. So I'm with you. I agree. Look, if you're going to, but I'm saying is if they're going to burn the red shirt, it needs to be now, and it doesn't look like they're going to do that.
It wouldn't surprise me if they did, especially if early on in the game, kind of starts going a different direction.
Yeah, I mean, and then that's another thing, too. I mean, if it just goes all to hell in the game, in second quarter we saw Armani Rodgers, that's fine, too. I just think if it's going to be, it's going to be this week. But again, that would also be not a great move on their part, because if you're going to split time between three quarterbacks going into the game, and then if you had the plan, all right, hey, you know what, we're going to burn it, let's do it now in the second quarter, you should have just given him the time and then made him the starter and given him all week with the ones instead of, a drive here and there during practice, and then all of a sudden in the second quarter you're getting blown out 21-0 against Fresno State. You're like, all right, go ahead in there, kid.
I'll say this, or I'll ask you this, and I'll ask anybody listening, you can tweet us at MeJVT or at Joe Arrigo or at Inside the Rebels. How would you feel if Johnny Stanton and Armani Rodgers a month from now are splitting time at quarterback? Because the plan going in was Stanton and Palandek to split time. So why not put your two best quarterbacks to split time with them? If you're going to split time, the two best ones. And then whoever has the hot hand that game, that's the one that stays in the game.
I mean, it works for some. It would depend on how they handle them, I guess. I mean, it works for Texas. You have a passing guy. You have a running guy. It works for some, but I think it's just how you use it. Because I also think that messes with your mentality. If you're doing it just based on performance as opposed to scheme like Texas does, then I think you're sending a quarterback out there. He knows someone's over his shoulder, and like Johnny already presses as it is, he's going to try to start pressing even more. So I guess if you're doing it scheme-wise, like if Armani's going to be in charge of all these read options and things of that nature and big deep throws because you think he's more accurate, then that's fine. But I think if it's going to be based on competition alone, then I think that's not self-sufficient, because then you have guys pressing and knowing that, okay, I have to make this decision now or else Armani's going to come in and I'm not going to play the rest of the game.
But you don't think Johnny may feel that Armani's already on his shoulder, on his neck like that?
No, because I think the coaching staff believes in him. I think they've shown that they believe in him up to this point.
I would agree, but I think he knows in that quarterback room and in that locker room, when he looks across and sees numero uno, that's the future.
Yeah. But I also think he thinks that they brought me in to win now, and I have another year after this. So if I play well enough this year, then I'm going to be the guy again next year.
They brought him in to win now, and I agree with that.
Yeah.
To play devil's advocate now. They're not winning. They won one game, and they lost at least one game that they should have won and another one that they probably could have won.
Mm-hmm.
Really, every game they could have won. They're not winning.
Yeah.
But you brought him in to win now.
Uh-huh.
He's not getting the job done.
Well, this isn't a 10-win team, though. This is a 6-win, 5-win team.
This could have been a 9-win team.
No, I don't think it couldn't have been a 9-win team.
Absolutely. UCLA, Boise, and San Diego State were the three games that you could chalk up, looking at the schedule going in, that you could chalk up as L's. Reno's winnable.
But I know you watch this team play. It's not just – watch the whole entire team from secondary to defensive line to everything. Okay, this is not a 9-win team.
I'm talking about going into the season without just looking at the schedule. You could look. Wyoming, beatable. New Mexico, beatable. Fresno State, beatable. Reno, beatable. That's four. Plus, you figure Idaho would have been 5. Central Michigan would have been 6. 7 was Jackson State. And then they have one other game – and I'm having a brain fart. That's 8 wins or 2 other games that are winnable.
But you use the phrase winnable. I mean, they've dropped these games before.
Absolutely.
In conference. This isn't a good conference, granted, but when you play in conference, I mean, they're going to lose games. I think you've even used the phrase. They're going to lose games that they shouldn't. They're going to win games that they should.
Exactly.
Some of those games they're going to lose. I think they could possibly lose to Wyoming again this year.
Well, anything is possible. Yeah. I can't say that's not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But realistically, like for me, going in, I thought 9 wins was realistic. Best case scenario is 9 wins. That may be a better way to put it. Best case scenario, 9 wins. Worst case, 6. I don't think 6 wins is out the question. I think that's maybe best case now. But at the end of the day, Tony's job is to win games. And I can say this. I make no bones about it. There is not a bigger Tony Sanchez fan than me out here. I can honestly say this wholeheartedly. I believe in what he's selling, him as a football coach, as a recruiter, and as a man. I would, if I ran a program, a bigger D1 program, he'd be one of the first guys I call, to be honest with you. I believe that much in what Tony sells. I believe in a lot of the staff he has in place. I think they're really, really good coaches, experienced coaches, guys that know what they're doing. Tony knows he needs to win games, especially with the Fertitta Complex being built, now with the stadium, all that happening behind the scenes, whether or not it gets built, but UNLV's in a position one way or another to get a new stadium now. He knows he needs to win. I find it hard to believe that you can win more than 3 games with Snead or Palandek. That's just me. And that's not saying that those guys suck, because they're not. They're Division I quarterbacks. And I give them 100% credit for that. As I said before, not everybody can be a Division I quarterback. If it's that easy, you'd be one. I would be one. People listening, you'd be one. Your daughter would be one. Your son would be one. That's just the reality of it. It's hard to be a D1 quarterback. But you have guys, a guy in line that's there that you have – sold on coming to your program. We're going to give you the keys. You could earn the starting spot this year. Not 2 years from now. We probably would like to redshirt you, Armani. But you know what? You could get time your freshman year. He has the pedigree. His father played Division I football at Colorado. Played with Pritch. His dad played in the NFL. He's got the pedigree. He played in a pretty good league in California. The guy is a dude. You have other programs that aren't scared to hand the keys to the freshman. I'm not saying they're scared, but unless he doesn't know the playbook, unless he doesn't know what is expected of him as a quarterback, that's the only way. I mean, that's him not being ready. That's the only way that he shouldn't be in the game at this point.
Well, I think they're holding out hope that Stanton's still their guy, and I think that's what's getting them hesitant to burn the red shirt. And like Tony said, if we're going to burn it, then you know what? He's going to play, and I don't think they want to burn it and have him just not play as much as they would hope. So I think they're holding out hope for Johnny.
Dude, I'm holding out hope to grow some more, but I'm still going to be 5'6".
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just the reality of
it. But the reality also is this is not a win-now program. They're not. They want to win as much as possible, but they're not a win-now. They're not in that situation.
But when you're changing the culture –
mm-hmm.
Like Tony's completely changing the culture. He is building this from the ground up. He has to change the mentality of even guys that's in that locker room from the Hawk regime. You have to change the mentality of the people around campus, people that are boosters putting money into the program, which Tony has done a great job of, and in the community. The way to do that is to start to win. winning three games isn't going to get it done this year. And I don't think they're a three-win team. I think they're a 5-6-win team. And that's an improvement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he improved what? Did they win a game? Maybe won one game the year before he got here?
One, two.
Mm-hmm. So he improved by a win.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in a. He's been in almost every game. Mm-hmm. Except for the UCLA and the Michigan game last year. He's been in every game.
Yeah, that's what I would point to say that this actually isn't a win now. This isn't win now. He's showing that they're improving, and he's showing that they're moving in the right direction. But this isn't a let's throw everything to the wind. We brought this transfer in, all right, because he could possibly be our guy for the next 2 years while we develop our guy for the real future, so we can get him rolling and get him the most comfortable he is, so that when we finally unveil him, he's sick and he knows exactly where to go. The offense is tailored to him and everything of that nature, as opposed to now when you have Johnny Stanton. And again, like I said, you brought him in for a reason when it comes to Stanton. So what they're going to do is 3 weeks, because like I said, if they're burning the red shirt, it's this week. So I think the question is answered after this week. If we don't see Armani Rogers this week, I don't think we see him this year.
I respectfully disagree with that. I think they still could, because I think it depends. I think it comes down to it depends on Johnny. 3 weeks from now, if Johnny's knee is, if they're saying he needs to go get surgery and he's done for the year, and they're...
Well, see, to me, then that's a big mistake on their part, and then I'm going to look at them, and they need some heat for that, because if 3 weeks from now you're like, he needs surgery, then you've put your program back. Then this was the week that you needed to burn the red shirt for Armani. Like, we're not disagreeing that Armani should be playing or anything. My thought process is, if Armani is going to play this season, then Sanchez comes out in that press conference, says, Armani's our guy, we're tailoring everything towards him, we're starting now, this is it. And then when Johnny comes back, we'll see if he can compete. We'll see if he's at full speed. But today is the day where we unveil the Armani Rogers era, and everything going forward is going to be with him. Because think about it, too. You have, like I mentioned, three fresh wide receivers. If you're going to burn it, now's the time. Have him build that chemistry with these fresh wide receivers from here on out. I don't care about playing against San Diego State, because he needs to be in there. He needs to learn what it's like to play the top teams in this conference. If you're going to burn the red shirt for Armani, the smartest thing is to do it now, because if you don't, it's a waste of time.
I think I don't disagree with you in the sense where in that regard. I think we have. I'll put it like this: September 28th, 2008.
Mm-hmm.
I broke my arm pitching, releasing the ball, snapped my humerus. I'm showing JVT. I got a rod and eight screws in my arm.
Mm. Big happy 8-year anniversary.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Changed my life forever. They told me initially I didn't need surgery, that it can heal on its own, the bone can calcify, and it would take about 6 to 8 weeks. Less than that time later, 6 weeks later, I had to take care of some family business, and I came back home, and I'm going through therapy. Also, I move my arm left and this, and I see this thing popping up in my arm, and I asked the physical therapist, and she tells me, and she shouldn't have, but it's not healing. It's broke still. I had to get surgery that July. But they wanted it to heal, try to heal by itself. This could be that same situation. My son had a sprained MCL last year. And it took 3 weeks, 4 weeks for it to heal. But he still had to wear a brace. And he still wasn't the same type of player. He played on it. But also led to patella tendonitis in the knee now. So there... It can heal naturally, but sometimes it's not in the time frame needed. And that's my point. If it doesn't heal naturally, if they say, you know what, we just can't, it's we just need to cut him open. At that point, that's why you put Armani in now. Because, put him in. And even at that point, it could be the last four games of the year.
See that, but if it's at that point, then Tony's going against his own word that if we're going to burn it, then he's going to play. I mean, why would you burn a whole red shirt when you haven't played him for the first 8 weeks, and now all of a sudden it's like, yeah, okay, we'll do it.
Well, because makes no sense. You could be in a position to get to that six wins and get to a bowl.
If Dalton Snead and Kurt Hallendeck are the guys to lead you. But then if that's the case as well, so let's just say if you're in position to get to a bowl, why would you switch quarterbacks if your quarterback's performing at that point?
That's a valid point, but it could be they're getting there in spite of the quarterback. They're getting there because the
running all of a sudden the defense just turns into
the defensive line and the linebackers have played a hell of a lot better the last 2 weeks. The problem is the secondary. We'll get into that later in the show. But the problem is the secondary. It's not. I mean, again, when you look at D line, it's not necessarily sacks. It's not necessarily Well, it's not necessarily sacks. It's quarterback pressures. How many hits is he taking? Are you making him uncomfortable in the pocket? How are you getting the pressure? Is it your line? Is it your backers? Is it a mixture of both? The last couple weeks has been a mixture of both. So that's a good thing, and you see that. The rest of that falls on the secondary, and the fact they're not wrapping up tackling. That's a completely another issue. But that D-line is doing a decent job. So the D-line could be doing that. Let's say you know, a point of emphasis this week in practice has been the secondaries getting their head around, being more having better ball awareness. Mm-hmm. That's something that Tony said is a big-time point of emphasis this week for the defensive backs. Great. That's what's needed. So let's say the practice starts turning over into games, and you start seeing it in the games, and you're controlling the games with your running game and your short passing game, and every now and then you'll surprise them over the top. Mm-hmm. But it is your running game that's leading you to victory in spite of your quarterback. Then let's say at practice, Armani's just killing it. Armani's in there, and he's throwing dimes, dropping balls in a bucket deep, you know, just killing it, just ripping and gripping. Gripping and ripping. Mm-hmm. You use a yogiism, right? And turn around. Well, we got 4 wins and we got 4 games left. You know, we got a shot to get to a bowl. He may get us to 7 wins. To hell with it. Let's do it. What do you got to lose? So he misses the first X amount of games in his season. But he still leads you to a bowl game, potentially. Like, that's money for the school, money for the program, put you on TV, something you want.
Well, if it gets to that point again, like I said, I think you're going against your own word that you're essentially wasting a whole entire season. But, again, that's a question that needs to be answered when we get to that point. Right now they have Fresno State. Right now it's Dalton Snead. And I think we both agree that the time is now, but so far it isn't. And I think, I guess we'll see after that. But I think today's the day. I thought yesterday was the day. If you're going to move to Armani, that was the day.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Something could change your practice today.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, we have until Saturday. So we have a guest coming up right now. Who is it?
My guy, he is a former NFL safety, played in the Super Bowl with the Chicago Bears. He was a Fresno State defensive back under Pat Hill, and he is currently the Fresno State color commentator as well as the afternoon host on ESPN Fresno. It's my guy, one of my dudes, Cameron Worrell. What's up, Big Cam?
Good to be on with you guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Oh man, I appreciate you coming on, man. You know,
of course.
Obviously you're with Fresno State, and we're down here in Vegas. We're mortal enemies this week, brother. So,
right.
You know, if you could give a UNLV fans just a taste, what's Fresno State like this year? I mean, I know what I've seen on film, but I mean, you've seen them every day. You see them in practice. What's going on with the Bulldogs?
Well, I think. You know, I think they are at a very, you know, serious point in this, you know, the direction of this program right now. You know, you have a young quarterback, you have a young offensive core that is in the first year of a new system, and they're trying to figure out what their identity is, what Chase and Virgil can do, what his skill set offers this offense, how they can expand the playbook to fit what he does well. And, you know, I think there's a little bit of transition on that side of the football, and there's a little bit of growth that is going on right now. On the defensive side of the ball, you know, they demoted their defensive coordinator last year. He's now a linebackers coach. They bring in Lorenzo Ward from South Carolina, where he had a lot of success with Steve Spurrier down in the SEC. But this is a defense that, you know, they've struggled. Tim Dugger came from Texas A&M as a defensive coordinator, and the first year they were here, they put up very good numbers, and since then it's been a steady decline. And across the board, if you look at the numbers of this defense, I mean, they are bad right now. They are a bad, bad defense, and they're trying to figure out what they can do, what personnel they can put on the field, what, you know, how they can tweak their scheme or their techniques to give themselves a chance. I mean, this team went up 31-0 on a, you know, I think a pretty good Tulsa team early in the second quarter, and they got outscored 48-10 the rest of the game, lost in double overtime. Like, that's unacceptable. Yeah. And that's been the trend of this team for the last couple of years. So they're searching for themselves right now. They're trying to figure out who they are, how they can remedy what they have not done well in the last couple of years. And this year's defense, it's, you know, statistically right now, it's as bad as it's ever been at Fresno State.
So is there a chance then it sounds like DeReuter would be on the hot seat?
Oh, no question. Yeah. I mean, you know, and if you ask Coach DeReuter that question, he would say, of course. You know, Jim Barco came in from Oregon last year as a new athletic director here. And, you know, he was there through all that Oregon growth process, you know, going from a bottom-rung Pac-10 team to a powerhouse in the Pac-12 with the best facilities in the country and so many amenities for athletes that people want to go play there. And his goal is to do that here at Fresno State. And to do that, you have to win football games. I mean, plain and simply put, you have to win football games. They're trying to do an $80 million stadium expansion and renovation. Now, they don't have the right $10 million check. You know, you have to win. You have to put butts in the seats, and you have to get what community support together you can. And to do that, you have to win a football game. So, yeah, the pressure on this coaching staff right now, it's at an all-time high. They need to win football games. You cannot have these goals and have these plans come to fruition if you can't even compete in the Mountain West. And right now, that's what Fresno State, you know, that's what they were last year, and, you know, they have an opportunity this year, but they have to get some things fixed quickly to do that.
Well, Cam, you've kind of touched on what I wanted to go to next. The AD coming in from Oregon, he has a history of fundraising and really trying to do he does a very good job of getting the community support around his program, especially as he did in Oregon. And I know Fresno's big with the Bulldogs. I mean, that's the first love of that city. With someone like Scott Frost down in Central Florida, he could be a potential replacement for DeReuter if something changes. But is this season's success indicative of what could happen with the stadium expansion and with the facility upgrades as well?
Yeah, I mean, Joe, you know what the culture around Fresno is. You know, you know what this community can be. I mean, when I played here, we maybe didn't sell out every game, but it was packed and it was crazy and it was loud. It was a tough place to play.
The entire
community was behind this football team, and they played a 1:30 game against Tulsa, which was rare. Garth Brooks was in town. He had two shows Saturday night. They weren't going up against Garth Brooks. Okay, so they moved it to 1:30. The reported attendance was 23,000, but there were maybe 14,000 people in that stadium. I had never seen a kickoff in that stadium, regardless of what time it was, who the opponent was, look like that at kickoff. And, you know, those things cannot continue if you're going to accomplish the things that this administration wants to accomplish. Just plain and simply put, you cannot continue to operate that way. And if you don't win, it's not going to change. If you win in Fresno, you know, Derek Carr's senior year, there were sellouts here. The fans were crazy. So much excitement around Fresno. If you don't win, they're gone. You have, you know, maybe 13,000-15,000 diehards who are going to be there through thick or thin, but that's it. The other, you know, 25,000 fans it takes to fill up your stadium, they'll come if you win, and if you don't, they're not going to be there.
We're talking to Cam Rorell from ESPN Fresno. He's Fresno State's color commentator, good friend of mine, and a former NFL football player as well. Cam, I want to follow up with that. You played with Coach Hill, and Coach Hill gave you guys a mentality, anybody, anytime, anywhere. And that was like your mantra. That was his mantra the whole time. And I think looking at it, I think Boise State, and I want to get your opinion about this. I've always thought this, and I've talked about it with mutual friends of ours. When Boise State beat Oklahoma, I thought that hurt Fresno State more than anybody else because they got that signature win against the huge program. And that's something that Coach Hill really didn't do, even though he took on USC with Reggie Bush under Pete Carroll. He would go to Wisconsin and play the Badgers with, it wasn't Barry Alvarez at the time.
It was Barry.
So, I mean, do you think that kind of hurt the program and set the program back, not getting that big signature winner to Coach Hill?
Yes, I do. Because, you know, 2001 is a prime example. You know, we're ranked eighth in the country. I mean, we got first-place votes, like legit first-place votes in the AP poll because of the way we dismantled Colorado, who ended up going to the Fiesta Bowl, the way we went to Wisconsin and beat them down. the way we beat, you know, the Sports Illustrated number one team in the country, Oregon State, at home. Just, I mean, we mollywopped and beat these teams up. And we were supposed to be the program that busted that BCS. We were supposed to do that. We were supposed to go to the Fiesta Bowl. We were supposed to beat an Oklahoma or, you know, a program like that, a Florida State, a Baylor, whatever. That was supposed to be us, and we didn't get it done. And for all the success we had, for all the success Coach Hill had, and for, I mean, he had a lot of Power 5 victories. You know, that Colorado team was in the top 10 the year we beat them in 2001. He beat a lot of good football teams, but he never got to the BCS. He almost beat that USC Reggie Bush team, but didn't get it done. So, yeah, I mean, Boise became what we should have become, or what the plans were to become. And Boise hasn't slowed down. I mean, I really – you go back to that 2001 game, you know, Boise's 3-3, we're 6-0, we're riding high. And Boise comes into Bulldog Stadium where we had lost in 23 home games, and they beat us. And, you know, that was the end of the BCS. That was the end of the Fiesta Bowl dream. And since then, their program has taken off to levels that Fresno State tried to get to. And I think, you know, you can go back there and you know, look at how Boise was able to turn that program to success. And Fresno State had, you know, had good wins, but never reached what Boise's a national name. They're a national respected program, and that was what Fresno State was trying to accomplish, and never really had that breakthrough victory.
So let's get to the Bulldogs that are on the field today. One guy I wanted to talk about, you mentioned him a little bit, was Chase and Virgil. They don't really know what they have at him, completing only 50% of his passes. What can Rebel fans expect to see when they watch him play this weekend?
Well, you know, I think you have a kid with he had a Mississippi State offer. They kind of pulled it because he, you know, didn't kind of develop as, you know, physically like they wanted him to throughout his senior year. So he opened his recruiting process back up, and Fresno State, you know, I think got a recruit that, you know, had another SEC team called, or had he been recruited later, maybe wouldn't have gotten him. So he's a kid with, an elite-level skill set. He's very athletic. You know, last Saturday against Tulsa was the first time I think this coaching staff and Chasen himself really felt comfortable running that zone read and pulling the ball when the read told him to pull the ball. I think he rushed for 65 yards. He ran for two touchdowns. So his physical skill set was on display Saturday like we hadn't seen yet. So you'll see he's a redshirt freshman. He's a kid that is continuing to grow in this system, in this program, as a college quarterback. But, you know, he'll make some throws that you'll say, man, this kid's got it. You know, you can see the elite-level skill set that he has. And there will be times where, you know, he might escape the pocket a little too soon instead of stepping up and trying to make a play. You know, his completion percentage is down. He has been, I think, this season inconsistent with his accuracy. But I think built into this system is, you know, he's coached to, if you don't have an open receiver, escape and get out. If there's nothing, just throw the ball away. We'll live with that. You know, they want his completion percentage to get up around 60%, but knowing that there are going to be those balls that get thrown away. So you'll see a quarterback that is growing. And honestly, watching Stanton on film, I know he's a little bit older. I know he was at Nebraska, had a great season at the junior college level last year. But I think these two kids, now they're not physically built the same at all, but I think they both struggle a little bit with accuracy. They struggle a little bit with decision-making at times. At other times, they, you know, can deliver great footballs on the money. They can use their legs to create positive plays. I think it's kind of, even though they don't look the same, I think these two quarterbacks are really trying to develop and play a more consistent brand of football. That's what Rebels fans can expect out of Chase and Virgil.
Quarterback's best friend is the running game. Fresno State's, though, about 3.3 yards per carry. What's been the biggest issue in that area? Is it offensive line play? Is it running back play, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, when you average 3.3 yards a carry, it has to be the offensive line that is the reason why. You know, I think Dontell James is a capable back. You know, he's 225 pounds. I think he had his most physical game against Tulsa on Saturday, where he it really moves the pile. But, you know, this offensive line has struggled. They have been physically beaten at the point of attack, you know, every week other than maybe the Sac State game. And that's not something that you can have success in the run game if you continue to do that. So Chasen did open up some things with the keep on the zone read last Saturday, and that did help their rushing numbers a little bit. But as far as lining up and trying to run the football, this offensive line right now is not at a place where they can do that. You know, if you know they're running the football, they have a hard time running the football. And it does start with how this offensive line has been physically beaten at the point of attack on a regular basis. You know, Nebraska, you can accept. I think Toledo has a pretty decent front, and Tulsa's a decent team too, but you have to get some push. You have to get some movement if you're going to run the ball consistently, and thus far they have not gotten that.
Cam, last question, and I want to shift gears to the NFL because I know you're big on player safety and what the league has and hasn't done. Looking at the NFL as a whole right now, when we're at their commissioner, who we refer to as Fidel Goodell, thanks to you.
I love it.
What he's done as far as player safety and in particular head injuries, do you feel that the NFL is finally taking the right course, or do you think that right now football in general needs to start reevaluating things when it comes to head injuries and the way the game is played currently?
I mean, you know, this is a topic we could probably spend a whole bunch of time on. But, you know, my main issue with the NFL, and it's been this way for a long time, is Roger Goodell's answer to, you know, hits to the head and the concern over long-term, you know, brain injury and things like that is to find players. It's to find players who 75% of those players in the league right now are going to be broke within, you know, 3 to 5 years after their career is over. He is always reactionary in his discipline, and usually that discipline is discipline of the players. And, you know, the game right now in 2016 is way safer than it was in 2008, the last year that I played in the NFL. So it's much, much safer. And I think they are trying to make a violent, violent game with elite athletes running full speed into each other as safe as they possibly can. But, you know, to do that, there has to be a way to regulate, you know, hits that should be taken out of the game. You know, during the game, that first, the prime time, Thursday night, opening season, Super Bowl rematch, Cam Newton got battered, and he got battered to the head, and they threw one flag that ended up being offset by an intentional grounding call. Like, if you're really serious about head injury, if you're really serious about taking these hits out of the game, then police the game like that's the most important thing. And they failed that night. I know they're continuing to try to do that, but it has to be twofold. You have to make sure the rules are applicable and can be enforced on the field. And then, look, man, when you have players leave the game, you have to make sure that those players who gave their bodies and some of them gave their brains to the success of the NFL, you have to do more to take care of those players. You know, I know people get upset, like, man, you made millions of dollars and there's a money grab from these players. They just want to be paid. Like, that's not the case at all. Think about if you're at your job and 10 years later you realize that you have a traumatic brain injury based on what you did as a profession. You would expect to get taken care of, at least medically, at least make sure that you're doing everything possible to ensure the long-term health and well-being of your players. And I think the NFL has to do more to ensure that. And I think current players have to do more to make sure the former players who laid the foundation for, you know, the $160 million cap that they share in right now are taken care of. You know, but, man, I'm with you. Like, Roger Goodell, his answer is always to penalize, to fine, to suspend players when it comes to these issues. They need to find a better approach to, you know, penalizing teams, organizations, franchises who you know, continue to employ guys with that have hits to the head or things like that. It has to be a much more well-rounded approach, not just throwing a fine at the player.
Man, Cam, I appreciate the answer. You know, I completely agree with you, and I look forward to seeing you Saturday night. Hopefully you're wearing all black. We're having a blackout here, so so I look forward.
Oh, man, that's going to be fun. Hey, man, I love black beanies. I'm kind of, you know, I'm a little scared that UNLV is going to come out and play like they're going to look, because those black beanies are going to look sweet and they're going to look mean, and hopefully they don't intimidate Fresno State too much and see a good football game.
I hope so, brother. Thanks for joining us, man, and I'll see you Saturday night. I'm going to stop by the booth and say what's up, brother.
You got it, man. Good talking to you, as always.
You too, my man. That's Cameron Morrell, ESPN Fresno, Fresno State's color man, and all around, just generally speaking, he's just a good dude. I've worked with Cam a number of times, and when it comes to football, really one of the best guys, X's and O's. Mm-hmm. He's a former DB, and that leads me to ask you a question, JVT. Okay, we talked about Stanton in his play on Saturday. I think we're in agreement that the secondary is the weak spot of the defense this year, more so than – at least my opinion is the weak spot of the defense, but they have not played well all year long.
Yeah, because I hesitate just because I thought that the pass rush was the biggest issue for this team.
They had three sacks in the first half.
They had three. That's all they had, though, correct?
No, they may have only had three, but they were pressuring the quarterback, which was leading to him to come out the pocket and make some bad throws. That's just as important as a sack to me.
Okay. I thought the pass rush was going to be there, but of course, it doesn't take a lot of time to take three steps back, chuck a ball up as high and as far as you can, and then let a defensive back try to play one-on-one with the receiver. So I think I'll be with you, because the secondary eventually got a little bit worse, and I'm with you. Like, even against Central Michigan, the pass rush put Cooper on his ass.
His ass.
I was gonna say, they put Cooper on his ass about three or four times. So that's why I'll concede that the pass rush isn't the biggest issue. It is still one, but the secondary play for sure, and just the one-on-one play of these defensive backs sometimes when you watch is the biggest question mark for sure on this team.
It to me is ball awareness, and it seems to me, and I've seen it a lot even at the NFL level, a lot of teams now are throwing deep on DBs. Especially if they know they're have zero coverage with no safety help over the top or whatever the case may be. But Saturday night, it seemed like they were picking on Torrey McTyer.
Mm-hmm.
That was the guy that they singled out that were picking on him. And it seemed like that's been the prevailing method that teams are doing all year. They're going at Torrey. I don't know why. But until Torrey steps up and gives them reason not to, they're going to continue to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not just Torrey. I mean, Jayon Miles had that pass interference call.
That was a bad call.
Yeah, you thought so?
I thought so.
It was shaky, but again, you put yourself in that position to get that call. I mean, sometimes in this sport, the way it's called, you're going to get a pass interference in that situation.
You know, the thing is with Jayon, I think he's a great cover corner. Mm-hmm. You know what his biggest problem is? Same problem I have. We're short.
Yeah.
And they have to play matchup with him. He can't – for him to go up against guys 6'1 or 6 foot or bigger – that's gonna hurt him. So they have to use him wisely. But he's had some very iffy calls go against him because he plays so aggressive and so physical for his size. And but I thought that was just a bad call.
Okay.
Generally speaking, I thought it was well played, good coverage on his end. I even thought, you know, his reaction said it as well too. Like, are you kidding me? How do you expect me to play defense? And I feel the same way. You can't expect a corner, a receiver to make a move. Let's say he's running a little dig route, a little in route, and a receiver to come around him. His arm is naturally, if one arm's coming around, one arm is going to be behind him, may even be on his hip, his back hip. That's unless he's pulling on it and turning him, that's not pass interference. If he's turning him with the other arm, then you got PI. I didn't see that with Miles.
So Torrey McTyer is then your...
Yeah, and I hate it because I like Torrey too.
Yeah.
I like him a lot. I loved his
dad.
Made a
good play on that last Idaho drive in regulation.
Yeah, you know, you text me and he said, you text me a nice text.
Well, because we got to get a backstory is because I got a text message prior to that play saying, and I don't have it word for word, but Torrey McTyer's play is not up to par. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I said he's getting toasted tonight.
Yeah. And then he had a great play where he broke. It looked like a curl route, and he broke on the ball perfectly and broke the play up beautifully. Stood up, gave the whole emphatic incomplete sign.
Loved it.
And I just responded with, "Tor McTire says, bleep you, bro."
Yeah, it is funny because after Stanton in overtime ran down to the 5-yard line or whatever it was, I had a text ready to go, a response from Johnny to you. And I shouldn't have typed it so soon.
Yeah.
I didn't. Obviously, it didn't get sent.
So when it comes to these defensive backs, I mean, coming out of Central Michigan, the big issue was what you heard from the coaching staff was communication, right? Yeah. Communication.
Absolutely.
Guys thought they had safeties behind them when they didn't. Guys thought they had this area covered when they didn't. Things of that nature that's easily fixed. What we saw on Saturday was more plays of the physical nature where it's one-on-one. This is your guy. You need to be able to outwork him for that ball. And that didn't happen.
A lot of it, and it goes back to what I've talked about since week one, they're not getting their heads around. Mm-hmm. The corners are not getting their heads around. And I was like, all of a sudden, they're running with them. All of a sudden, they see the guy's hands come up to this, throw their hands in the air. You know, and it's like, no, turn your head. When his head turns, you're
almost like trying to face guard, where you're
exactly.
just, you see the guy who you're defending react. You don't know what's going on, so you just throw the hands up and hope that the ball hits you at some point and not them, or it just makes it more difficult for him.
Yeah, and then if you see that they catch it, then you can swipe the ball down or whatever the case may be. So I think that, you know, the secondary play has to step up because last week, the week before, we said, okay, they weren't getting pressure, and that makes it harder for the DBs to cover. Mm-hmm. Well, last week, they were getting pressure. And they still couldn't cover that well. And I'll say this. Coach Williams is a hell of a defensive back coach. One of the best ones in the country. Really, he is. And that's why I asked Pritch last week, is it scheme or is it talent? Because right now it looks like talent more than it does scheme.
It's got to be a mixture of both, I would think.
Well, yeah, but I think I would agree it's a mixture of both. But I think it's leaning also because towards talent on that side isn't where it needs to be yet.
Well, I agree with you on that, but I would also argue that when it comes to, let's just say, coaching, like you say, you know, they get lost or they don't find the ball or anything. I mean, to me, that's a coaching thing. You need to teach these guys, get it instilled in them. You need to be able to find the ball when you're in one-on-one, especially deep. You need to be able to attack that ball at its highest point. You got to have those foundational skills because at least, you know, some of the guys in sports, and I can't even think off one of the top of my head, but, you know, an athletic guy who actually comes out and really does some good because he's working, because he knows the fundamentals, as you call it, but you can teach fundamentals. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, not getting lost and being able to go up and get a ball, those are basic skills that I think you got to instill in these guys. And to go back to the Central Michigan game, if one issue is communication and then the next week it's just basic ball, you know, ball hawking skills, I mean, you have to have some questions as to what's going on when it comes to coaching these kids.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that, but I just think that you can be able to put a scheme together, put something together, put a game plan together. When they get out there, they're going to do what they're going to do. And that's just the reality of it. So that being said, I wanted to just say one thing before we move on to the final game or before we get into the Fresno State game. I got a lot of tweets after the game Saturday asking, and it's some during the game, for Kent Bear to be fired.
Mm.
One guy, Tony, needs to be fired. Cotton. Look, let's be honest. That's not going to solve anything. Okay. Those three coaches are three very – well, okay, with Bear and Cotton in particular, they've been in this game a long, long time. Coach was coached some of the best players that's played the game with some of the best coaches that's coached the game. They're not going to go anywhere. Tony is an ascending coach in the college football ranks. We are lucky to have him, lucky that he wants to be here. I'm just going to be honest because there's other programs like USC that could come knocking if there's some success here. Because SC, from what I've been told, will make a change by the end of the year.
Yeah, they have to. Clay Helton's not the guy.
Well, yeah, but Hermanson is a name that he's from the Inland Empire, and he's a guy that they want to bring back to California, and that they're like, okay, we want to move forward with this type of guy. Tony's in that same conversation for everything he's doing here at UNLV. So firing the coach isn't an answer. Before someone says that, how would you feel if somebody went to your job and said, "Yo, you suck at flipping burgers, fire
him"? Well, that's what fans are going to do, though. But I agree. Look, especially the world of college football, like, He just brought in the best recruiting class in UNLV's history. Yep. He's still getting his guys, his foundation in there. I would say by year three, if there's not the, and I'm not saying 10 wins, let's go. Right. If there's not an uptick in wins and a visual on the field improvement, because clearly we still haven't really seen it. We thought we did with UCLA, and it kind of just went right out the window with the next two games. So if by year three, if we're getting to the midseason and we're still having these same issues that we're talking about today, then maybe we consider, all right, was the jump too much from high school to cut? That's fine. But right now I'm with you. There's no reason to fire, because UNLV was so low.
Yeah.
It's going to take a lot of effort to bring the program back up.
Exactly. And that's the way they're going. They're an ascending program.
And let's be honest, too. UNLV is not one of the places where you're going to be like, okay, let's fire him. And who do we want today? Like,
It's not LSU.
Yeah, no. And especially when a lot of the people who are contributing money to the program are contributing money to the program because of the man who is in place.
Exactly.
You're not getting Fertitta Football Complex if Coach Tony's, Schmuck A is head coach here.
Exactly. Exactly. So, that being said, Saturday, 7:30,
mm-hmm.
Sam Boyd, a blackout. You wearing black?
No, man. I'm an impartial journalist, so I'm going to be wearing blue.
I'm wearing black.
Okay.
I already have the fit put together. I'm wearing black. Man, hey, I'm going to tell you why.
No cheering allowed in the press box.
I don't cheer. I sit up there. Dude, what sucks is we're on opposite ends.
I just like the announcement. If for people who don't know, you know, before every single game, before halftime, before the game, you know, the PA guy comes on in the booth and he says, and remember, cheering is absolutely unacceptable in the press box. And I think it's funny because I was like, I find it hilarious that you have to announce that to people before games.
And look, I'll say this. It didn't happen at UNLV. It's happened at another press box. Nice. Where they make that announcement, and then there was a play call, and it was just a horrid play call. And in the press box, and you know how it's pretty quiet. Mm-hmm. For you guys don't know, in the press box, it's pretty quiet. You'll have some conversations. Like, I'll walk down the hall or walk down the other and talk to you, JVT, or whomever. And someone in the press box, and I don't know, I'm not going to say who it was, said, who the F made that play call? Yeah. And they're like, I thought the same thing. So you get that type of stuff up there sometimes. But, I'm going to wear black just because, you know, I would let – and know it. They got to play some AC/DC too when they do it. They got to play some Thunderstruck or Back in Black or something before the game.
Isn't there a Rolling Stones song about black?
Probably. I'm not a big Stones guy though, to be honest with you. But I'm all about that. Like I'm all about
painted
this week.
Black. There we go.
Painted black. Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. So I think that this weekend, you know, and I'm excited about this weekend. It's homecoming as well. So there's going to be the pomp and pageantry there, you know, and everything. It's homecoming. I thought.
I don't know about that one, for sure.
I thought it...
You could be right. I just didn't. That was never really part of my... I didn't really look into that.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's going to be...
You know everything.
I should, huh? I'm sorry. I'm the insider.
We should both know everything, I guess. But
you know, it's going to be a badass game. You know, I like Fresno State in this game. I like UNLV in this game. I was tempted to pick Fresno State.
Spread's 10.5.
That's too high for right now. And until UNLV can show that they can really put it on somebody... put it on Fresno State. I think it's gonna be a little bit closer than that. That being said, Fresno State struggled with Sacramento State. And to me that's indicative of where that program is.
Spread's 10 according. So
UNLV plus 10 or minus 10?
Minus 10. Yep.
Yeah, you know, I think it's gonna be a high scoring game. At least I hope it is. You know, if it's a high scoring game, I love UNLV in it. If it's low scoring, I think all bets are off.
I will definitely take the Bulldogs plus 10. And to be honest with you, from what I have seen these last 2 weeks, because they're both bad teams. And you expected one team to be going in a different direction coming into this week as opposed to the other. And I'm talking about UNLV.
Yep.
Especially after the UNLV or the UCLA game, you thought, cool, we're going to make some progression. They're going to get better and better and better. And you were hoping maybe to come off a blowout win as opposed to going into Fresno State with more questions than really answers. Yeah. So I'll definitely, if we're talking spread, I'm definitely going with Fresno State. And I haven't watched a ton of Fresno State, but I just, from what I've seen from the Rebels, I think Fresno State might actually win this game.
Wow. Yeah. See, I think they're going to get a healthy dose of Lex and a healthy dose of Charles Williams. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see Devontae get off a little bit, get loose. But at the end of the day, it's hard for me to go against UNLV in this game. Now, against San Diego State, it's a different story. But this game in particular, I think this is the game that gets them back on track. And are they going to be a 9-3, 8-4 team? No. But a 6-6 team?
That's going to be rough with that loss to Idaho. Six wins.
You know what?
Because that was definitely, like, preseason, that was one of your wins if you were going to become bowl eligible.
But I'll say this, and I said this the very first podcast when it comes to this UNLV team. They're going to win some games they're not supposed to win, and they're going to lose some games they're not supposed to lose. They're just that type of team this year. So I really like them this week. I like them this week.
Give me a score.
Let's go 41-34.
Okay. I'll take Fresno State 31-28. It'll be a close one, but I think Fresno State ultimately pulls this one out. But next week, maybe I'm on here eating crow and they go out and blow them out. You can hope, but just from what I've seen, I'll take Fresno State so far.
If you're eating crow, I'll bring the Louisiana hot sauce for you.
Yeah, right. All right, that's Joe Rego, John Von Tobel. Anything else before we get out of here?
You know what? Guys, come on out. We need your support. Come on out in all black. Come out to the game. Enjoy it. And if you want to get at us, his Twitter handle is?
@MeJVT.
And I am @JoeArigo or @InsideTheRebels. And really appreciate you guys joining us right now. I mean, this has been a blast so far.
Yep. I've enjoyed it, too. I'll be there starting at 6, from 6 to 7 for UNLV pregame. So stop on by and say what's up. Don't be like the guy, though, last week who came up and this dude comes up in the middle of a live broadcast in Odell Beckham jersey. I got the headphones on and everything. We're talking. He's trying to show me some business card while I'm on the air. Just wait till we're done talking.
Come yeah, up wait for the break.
Wait for the headsets to come off.
I'm actually going to try to get there early, because I know there's going to be some great barbecue going on, some great tailgating.
Yeah.
The coaches from Centennial High School out here are going to be out at the game. They're going to be and one of them, Coach Williams, is raves about his barbecue. So I'm going to check him out and obviously hang out, try to get out with Cam a little bit beforehand. And I'll let you guys know Saturday. I may swing by your show, but I'll let you guys know via tweet what recruits will be at the game Saturday. Cool. There will be some recruits that will be there.
All right. Good to hear. All that stuff you can check out Saturday at Sam Boyd Stadium. 7:30 kickoff. Plenty of ways to get your tickets, but go out. I would say that. Go out and support the Rebels. They need it. Need it pretty bad. Sam Boyd Stadium could be a pretty good home environment if people turn out. Inside the Rebels podcast, episode 4 in the books. Joe Rego, John Von Tobel. We'll talk to you guys next week.